Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Chris Botti returns to Tanglewood tomorrow night, performing with the Boston Pops and special guest conductor Warren Slow. A gifted instrumentalist, talented composer, and charismatic performer, Botti has earned both critical acclaim and mainstream appreciation. In addition to his 4 number one jazz albums, he has multiple gold, platinum, and Grammy awards, performing worldwide and selling more than 4 million albums. Again, he'll be with the Boston Pops at the Shed at Tanglewood tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Coming to prominence in the mid-1990s, Botti says he established a reputation as a versatile musician excelling in both jazz and pop music, and he says the time that he started and luck had a lot to do with his success.
The record industry was so potent back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that record companies could invest in young artists, could allow them to go on the road and get tour support and really hone their craft. That is kind of much different now. And also, television was quite powerful then, too. So when I got on the Oprah Winfrey Show and stuff like that, that was quite powerful. And I had the help of a lot of great musicians like Sting and Andrea Bocelli and a lot of people that believed in me and allowed me to play my music and amongst their music as well. So many different factors add up to, and then there's the stars aligning where, you know, the sound of my trumpet somehow resonates into a musical fingerprint, and people know it's me and they relate to it. And that, I don't think you can teach or, you know, that's just kind of the worldwide name of luck, and I think I'm aware of that as well.
So much when you are on stage of watching you, and of course there's the incredible music that is coming from that stage, but you're also a very charismatic performer. Do you learn that over time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've stood on stage with some of the best musicians in the world, and I've seen them and talked to people about how to craft a show, and maybe I'm a little bit different from many, many jazz musicians that have come or current or come before me, where they don't necessarily, you know, want to, or they're not necessarily preoccupied with how the audience is feeling. They just kind of want to do their own thing. But, you know, my very first gig in my life as a professional was I joined Frank Sinatra's band when I was 21. So I got to see one of the best at that walk out on stage and interact with the audience. And there's two things going on. You have the great music on stage, but you also have the relatability that Sinatra had. And, you know, great old-time comedians like, you know, Don Rickles or something like that, they interact with the audience. They're not just looking up into the lights and announcing the next song. And I that made a big impact on me early on, and I knew I wanted to do the same.
It's interesting you mentioned Sinatra, because that must have been an interesting time, because people were there. He may not have been at his prime of his voice, but people were still there in droves to see that man just enrapture an audience.
Absolutely. I mean, when I played in his band, it was about 5 or 6 years prior to when things started to kind of unravel a little bit. So I was there. I was with him in 1984, 85, 84. And he still, you know, it was L.A. Is My Lady was the big, you know, coming out record for him. And he still had it, you know. I mean, as much as you can have it then, and me being the icon for many decades that he was. But it was an awesome experience. And Nelson Riddle Orchestra backing him up. And I was 21 or 22, like just out of college the day before. And got to do that. That was a great experience.
Talk a little bit about your partnership with Paul Simon.
Well, after moving to New York, you know, that was the very first real big touring break I got. And maybe the relationship was so fantastic with Paul, but also I learned, you know, from Paul about how he surrounds himself with the greatest musicians. So in that band, just in that band alone, was one of the greatest drummers of all time, Steve Gadd, one of the greatest saxophone players of all time, Michael Brecker, incredible Brazilian musicians, West African musicians, South African musicians. And I got to see how he you know, really groomed all those people, and he gave me the ability to appreciate an appetite for being on the road. Because there's a lot of people that say, oh, I'd love to have your career, Chris, and I'm saying, great, you know, but you can't have a dog or a plant or a cat or, you know, whatever. you give up a lot of normal life stuff to, and you better make sure that you're into that much travel, that kind of relentless, grueling schedule, which I don't find as relentless and grueling. I find it as a privilege to be able to go do that. But for a lot of people, and it's well documented throughout the course of music, you know, they don't really adapt to it. But I learned at 27 or 28 when I joined Paul's group to really love that life, and I have been chasing it ever since.
This was during the Rhythm of the Saints tour, and
correct.
Paul Simon, of course, is so known for that experimenting and looking at a world sound and different musicians from different parts of the world. So you must learn from that experience as well.
Absolutely. And both he and my later long stint association, and currently, I guess, with Sting,
right.
They both share, not only did they live in the same apartment building, like right on the other side of the building from each other, but they both, you know, have incredible taste in the musicians that they stand on stage with. And that is another thing Sinatra had. You know, like Sinatra, when you saw Sinatra, behind him is Count Basie Orchestra or Nelson Riddle Orchestra, and he had the best arrangers and the smartest people behind him. And Paul Simon had that, and Sting has that as well. And that is, sadly, you know, the currency of great musicians behind you is fading a little bit now, too, in popular music. And that's kind of something that I'm not too thrilled about. But for me, it's been great to surround myself with all these awesome musicians.
You were a band leader on the Caroline Ray Show.
That's a little bit of a misstatement. But I was the musical guest, and I went on the show, just like anyone does at one of those talk shows, and she asked me she loved the music and said, come back again tomorrow. And she threw me a question, and I answered it kind of quick, and we had a really good chemistry. And so she said, Chris, what I want you to do is just come jam with the band and sit on the couch with me and, like, basically shoot the breeze every day. And I said, well, I got to go on the road and all that stuff because I'm my own band leader. And she goes, well, great. So basically all I did was I'd roll in at the end, and the bass player was really the band leader. Tim LaFave was fantastic. And I would just kind of roll in and be the front person and sit in with Caroline. And I learned so much from her about be freewheeling on stage and, like, you know, really kind of let your inhibitions go when you're speaking in front of a camera or something like that. And it was an awesome experience. And every year we play at the Blue Note, and Caroline comes down once a year and gets up on stage and roasts me pretty good for, like, the first 10 minutes before she brings us up. She's awesome.
I was going to say, because I remember seeing a taping of that show, and you very much were front and center and seemed to be the person who she relied on. And it was that is a chemistry that you can't create. It's just luck, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Caroline's a very easy person to be around, and she's, you know, I've always said she's kind of like a jazz musician, even though she doesn't play an instrument, you know, but she's so quick, and she connects all the dots in such a brilliant way, and so kind of abstract in a way until you figure out what she's really talking about. It's so great. But I really learned a tremendous amount. I mean, I only did it for, I don't know, 3.5 months or 4 months, something like that, because I started in January, and by the time May comes, the show had been they already knew it was going to be off the air when I joined. But I loved the 3 months; it was great.
Tell us a little bit about the instrument that you play. When we see you, do you play the same trumpet each night?
I only own one trumpet. I really don't even own any possessions. I live in a hotel. I own no possessions. and I have one trumpet from 1939. It's a Martin trumpet, and it's my pride and joy. I love the instrument.
How did you find it, and what goes into the matching of a musician and instrument?
Well, that is, it's complete luck. Now, I have a great friend of mine, Jim Hale, that I went to school with, and he brought me the instrument. He's from Georgia, and speaks with this great Southern accent. He said, Chris, I think you really like this horn, you know, and I played like one note on it, not even asking him, you know, would you sell it to me, how much, any of that. I played literally one note, wrapped it in a towel and said, call me tomorrow, you'll get it back. I mean, you'll never get Ms. Horn back, but call me tomorrow and we'll work out what I have to do to make sure you'll never get it back. We traded horns, and that was the, I mean, I've played it ever since. I've had it for about 15, 16 years, but the original, I mean, but originally it was built in 1939.
I Let It Go the first time when I came around the first time when you were talking about this idea of living out of a suitcase and really not having any possessions. But do you see a point where, yeah, maybe that won't be as much fun as it is now?
I don't know. I mean, I've gone through all different sorts of phases in my life. You know, I was living in L.A. for 5 years and had the fancy house and the sports cars, and I was like, oh, I've turned into that guy. No, thank you. So I literally, it's been 3 years now, July 28th, 3 years ago, I vaporized everything I own. I own 6 suits and a trumpet, and I moved into a hotel in New York, and I've been there, checked in ever since 3 years ago. It's pretty wild. I love the kind of transient, I like not having possessions. It's not really my thing, so I'm enjoying it very much.
So the name of the memoir, of course, will be 6 Suits and a Trumpet.
That's pretty good, actually, yeah.
That's pretty good. So you'll be on the stage at Tanglewood tomorrow night with the incredible Boston Symphony Orchestra. Lawrence Lowe will be the very special guest conductor of the Boston Pops. And what can people expect from that evening of music?
Well, we're bringing with us a fantastic violinist, Caroline Campbell, and two marvelous singers, a classical singer, and, of course, Cy Smith, who's from our Live in Boston DVD as well, and my all-star band. So it's going to be a night of music that, you know, I mean, it's a very hard thing to explain if someone's never seen my show, but it is a show, and it has an arc, and it has a musical story to be told. It's not just a guy with a trumpet on stage. And so there's so much more going on. And I think that's what's kind of giving me the longevity in the business is having all those different looks.
Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Chris Bode returns to Tanglewood tomorrow night, Saturday night, 8 o'clock, performing with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Lawrence Lowe. Chris, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Travel safe, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. You take care, all right?
Thank you very much. Looking forward
Bye-bye.
To having you in town. It's tanglewood.org. For more information, tanglewood.org. Chris Bode in the shed at Tanglewood tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.